The integration of behavioral and physical healthcare is more important than ever as healthcare organizations work to increase access to essential treatment. On this episode of Moving Medicine, independent physician practice experts share their experiences integrating behavioral health into their practices.
I think a good place to start with your behavioral health integration journey is start from a place of curiosity and also recognize that you can renovate your house room by room. You don't have to do the whole house at once, right? And so the first step I might recommend would be to really assess your status. A situational assessment of what you currently are doing is incredibly important.
That's Dr. Yun Boylston, a pediatrician at Burlington Pediatrics in North Carolina. She's joined by Dr. Alexandra Capito, a licensed child psychologist with a specialty in pediatric and health psychology. Dr. Kathleen Blake, Vice President of Healthcare Quality at the AMA, leads this conversation on effective BHI strategies for independent practices. I'm your host, Todd Unger, Chief Experience Officer at the AMA. This is Dr. Boylston.
First, I'd like to just kind of talk to everyone about the needs of our community. And, a lot of things, I'm sure, this is true and resonant of not just our location, but also nationwide. You know, COVID-19 in terms of behavioral health is really kind of turned our practice upside down in terms of revenue, visits, the type of visits, and we've had to adjust and flex quite quickly. COVID-19 has also revealed a lot of the socioeconomic disparities as well as the healthcare disparities, and especially in terms of vulnerable populations that we serve, as well as created barriers to access to care. And we know this not just anecdotally, but also from quantified data. Our practice just completed a survey of our practice population, and of 613 respondents, we were able to really get a pulse on socioeconomic stressors, the concerns that patients and families have going forward. Two of the questions that I'd like to highlight here, one question was, I'm concerned that my children show signs of, being depressed, being anxious. Those are not uncommon concerns. And the majority of parents who responded have concerns about behavior. And secondarily, I'm concerned that COVID-19 will have long-term effects on my children. Approximately a third of parents did not have concerns, but over 40% of parents have concerns that COVID-19 will affect their children's long-term mental health. And so we are here to really talk about independent practices, which are truly healthcare small businesses. And I think it's really important that organizations, partners, insurance payers, when interfacing with independent practices like ours, admittedly, it's really obvious who gets it and who doesn't get it, and to really understand who we're about, some of our strengths, but as well as some of the realistic constraints that we operate under. And so some of those strengths would be, we're a really agile and flexible organizational structure. It's quite flat. And so things can be implemented quite quickly. We can improve operations fairly quickly. PDSA cycles are fairly rapid. We can get data extracted fairly quickly. We also have tremendous community influence. And that comes from a lot of the longevity of our providers. I'm one of the newer physicians at our practice, and I've been with the practice for 12 years. And we have several providers who have been here 25 plus years, some over 30 years. And so that's very meaningful in really laying down those deep roots within our community, as well as gaining influence with our community. And then the practice culture. I think that when you have, a high performing team, that in some ways it can be sustained and amplified a little bit more successfully than maybe with very large hierarchical organizations. And the flip side of this, we also have significant constraints. So we are quite a lean organization. And just for reference, our FTE to provider ratio as of February 2021 is 3.6. And so there isn't a lot of fat built into the system. And because of that, everything has to have a direct line to revenue, to expense. Consequently, there's very little room for error and no room for failure, clearly. And so we have to be very cautious about the projects or initiatives that we undertake. And secondarily to that, the return on investment must be realized really quickly. You know, we don't have years to really see the outcome or profitability of an initiative. We also have very limited economies of scale, which is pretty important. So why are we on this journey? What have we gained from this journey? I think some of these things are probably universal across the healthcare spectrum, but these and some of these are actually quite unique, I think, to independent practices. And so for patient care, I think it's incredibly clear, really irrefutable, that integrated behavioral care is a win for patients. You achieve continuity of care, you really reduce information gaps that can happen with multiple care providers in the patient's care management. You minimize errors for risk or medication errors, and you improve access to care. Lastly, you really reinforce the role of the medical home, which we celebrate. And in terms of provider satisfaction, I think it really having a strong, robust, integrated behavioral health program, it reduces cognitive burden on providers because the need is there. So it's not that you're not encountering it as a provider. I think if you have productive mechanisms and channels to be able to gain access and help your patient, I think that actually is incredibly beneficial to the provider. And there's also, interdisciplinary support that we really value within our model, and it really improves patient engagement. And so, for a provider, I think those are incredibly meaningful measures. And as far as financial stability, this is a little bit of the wild card for independent practices, but the benefits would be really diversifying your revenue streams. And so behavioral health is certainly in demand. And so being able to provide these services is a strength. For us, the fact that we have an integrated behavioral health program, that was a key component of our package to our private insurance negotiations that we completed in the past year, and really to use that as leverage to demonstrate that we really do provide comprehensive whole person care and ultimately result in cost savings for the whole system, including for the payer. And then the other thing that really affects financial stability is patient fidelity. When patients are connected to your practice, they recognize you as being the first stop for all of their healthcare needs, then that helps prevent some of that bleed that can go to urgent cares or other practices or going straight to a specialist. I think in a lot of ways you can realize some benefits. And so our mile markers on this journey, it's actually, it's still a work in progress, I think we've been on this journey for quite some time. And these are just a sampling of some of the things that I think should be on, that we, celebrate. These are a lot of our successes. And I think it's important to recognize that our journey is not prescriptive. It's going to be incredibly unique to each organization. I think these are just some good examples of the accomplishments that we've had and how they've meaningfully, shaped our mindset or helped instill some useful tools for our practice. So in 2012, we participated in Project Launch. A Project Launch was a SAMHSA grant that was provided to our practice to implement behavioral health within our practice. And so that grant allowed us to have a master's level psychologist, a family navigator. And we really give credit to Dr. Hillary Carroll, one of my partners. She has had a longstanding vision for our practice in helping to provide early childhood mental health and now evolved into just general behavioral health for quite some time. And I think participating in this grant-funded program really helped create that culture of awareness. It also allowed us to train, kind of staff-wide on Triple P. Triple P is the positive parenting program model. And so it really helped us kind of learn the language, which was incredibly helpful. In 2015, we had a team take part in the Clinical Quality University. This is a professional development program by the North Carolina Medical Society. And it really helped us form kind of the team approach to quality. So how do you pilot an idea? How do you measure outcomes? And then how do you continually, how do you continuously improve? And so really pilot, measure, and improve was an incredibly important feature that we, that we derived out of that program. And in 2017, we also applied for and received a grant for Project Ice Cream. And the Ice Cream grant is sponsored by the American Academy of Pediatrics. And it's really designed to help practices not just implement screens, but have actionable workflows on what to do with those screens. Right. I mean, everyone, I think intuitively it seems easy to implement a screen, but really the true crux of it is, what are you going to do with a positive screen? And so this really helped us systematize behavioral health screening and to respond to them in a meaningful way for our practice. And in 2019, we recruited Dr. Capito. We were just so thrilled for her to join our team. And I think that some of the plans that we had had really started to take off with her helming our behavioral health team. And so since she's joined us, one, not only has she had to navigate COVID and this absolutely the demand explosion for behavioral health, but also, this has allowed us to, as a practice, really build those clinical workflows. And a great example of this is we just had a great meeting yesterday, practice-wide, with nurses and managers and other providers to really develop our suicide safety plan for our patients. And our, challenges certainly are many, and these just highlight maybe just a snapshot of some of the things that we've experienced, and I'm sure that others out there who are participating certainly may, this may resonate with them. And the challenges are on several levels. One is, how do you implement a standardized, or just when implementing behavioral health in your practice, how do you promote standard practices and policies while also ensuring that there's space for each provider to practice their own style as well as their preference? And across the spectrum of our providers, we have newer providers, very seasoned providers, providers who have varying strengths and interests. And so how do we get everybody collectively across the finish line? I think that's a big challenge. And again, what to do with those positive behavioral health screens. We find that when you integrate behavioral health, the behavioral health encounters don't come from defined behavioral health visits. Every visit turns into a behavioral health visit. It's very routine for a physical appointment to really kind of shift gears and turn into a much more comprehensive behavioral health visit. And, other kind of pain points that we have are, when we kind of meet the threshold of our comfort level with a patient, how do we expedite and access services within our community in order to escalate care? And so we're actively building those bridges and connections to facilitate this, but this is an ongoing challenge. And then certainly scheduling challenges that, these aren't the quick, upper respiratory infection visits. They take a lot of care, time, and sensitivity. And how do you meet the needs of all the patients remaining in the day, but also address the concerns of the patient, right in front of you? The other points that that we'd also like to highlight, and Dr. Capito can certainly speak to this, with COVID especially, that has just really opened up a box of its own challenges. One, the increased demand. It's also really complicated the integration process because of the COVID protocols. We've also been really limited in our community resource base just because a lot of our area therapists were not accepting helping patients during, kind of the peak times of COVID. And it really made warm handoffs quite challenging. And we found that warm handoffs were incredibly vital to helping the patient feel comfortable in working through behavioral health, because it comes from their trusted provider and primary care provider to Dr. Capito. And so, with some of the restrictions, that's been hard. But the care team has been really successful with virtual handoffs, and Dr. Capito can speak to that as well. The other challenge, that may apply to some of the folks out there, we also have three locations, and Dr. Capito is one person, and Miranda, our care team leader, is also one person. And so it makes it somewhat challenging to be able to deploy resources across all locations. And then the tips that we have. So we actually have several tips, and we're certainly learning too, but these are some of the ones that we kind of humbly offer to the other practices that are interested in doing some of this work. We would recommend really developing the financial models early on. During our project launch grant cycle, which was 2 years, we actually did a lot of shadow billing, meaning we just kind of modeled, okay, if we were getting paid for these visits, how would we do this? What would our reimbursement look like? And that was really important for us to make the argument that this is financially sustainable, once the grant ended. And we were able to transition off the grant fairly smoothly, and also to include the behavioral health codes in contract negotiations. As I mentioned, last year we completed negotiations with five of our private payers. And one of the first things we mentioned, in our ask was, these are the codes that we need covered in a really robust way, on par with our other codes, like, the E&M codes, for us to consider your proposal. And then also sharing progress with stakeholders. And as you can tell, we love to tell our story, and that's no different from sharing our story with our community partners. And we find that when we share our successes, it really helps our practice too, in order for others to engage. This includes the clinically integrated networks that we're a part of, such as, like UNC's Health Alliance. North Carolina has its CCPN, as well as the North Carolina Pediatric Society, the Medical Society. And it really helps us engage with other people who are like-minded, and to even further improve our program. And we really like these serendipitous conversations, or what I might call happy collisions. I think building in room for that really helps innovative ideas come through. For example, one of our other partners, Dr. Page, and I, we took part in a mini psychiatric fellowship program for primary care providers. It's called REACH, sponsored also through the North Carolina Psychiatry Access Line, NCPAL. And as we were talking, we're like, we've really enjoyed these case presentations and studies in our group. Why don't we do that for our practice? And so we're actually implementing a bi-monthly case presentation where one provider discusses a case or presents a case, and other providers, our care team leader, Dr. Capito, we all have this like multidisciplinary input into how to manage that patient's care. And we're really excited about that. As well as marketing to your patients. You have to tell your patients what you offer before they seek it somewhere else. And so that's been a really important part. And some of this might not be, hey, we have these we have these programs. It might be through a video, like an educational video. Those tend to work out really well for our practice, and you're able to find those on our Facebook page. And lastly, engaging all members of your practice. I think this has been something that we've particularly been good at, and this includes everyone in billing, all your nurses, because they're the ones who are scoring the surveys, administering the surveys. And a lot of times they're the ones who have a good pulse on, seeing, they're the first to encounter the patient and see exactly what their concerns are, as well as the management team, all providers. And so making sure that your behavioral health program is not compartmentalized is a really important, really important component of success. And so these are some points that I really wanted to share with others. I recognize that we as a practice have been incredibly fortunate. We have strong leaders, and we've really been blessed with a lot of opportunities that frankly many other deserving practices may not have access to. But really, I think a good place to start with your behavioral health integration journey is start from a place of curiosity. And also recognize that you can renovate your house room by room. You don't have to do the whole house at once, right? And so the first step I might recommend would be to really assess your status. A situational assessment of what you currently are doing is incredibly important. Or you might want to ask your staff, and this would be your front office staff, what services do patients ask for most that we don't offer? You may not ever get wind of that because there's no appointment made for those things, right? They might just hang up and say, okay, I'll just, seek care somewhere else. Another option would be to survey your patients and families, like we have, that's been incredibly helpful just to gauge, exactly how our community is doing. Or it might come from a place of assess your behavioral health pain points, talk to the providers, get them together and see what is a repeated frustration that you have about about the current situation, right? Another recommendation might be assess your current behavioral health referral patterns, and that'll help you recognize where the demand is, but also where other patients might be seeking care. And a lot of that is just information gathering. So I think that's an incredibly important place to start. Another recommendation would be to grow your culture. I think a lot of the things that have made us successful in our behavioral health journey, it's actually derived from other things. It actually is derived from, when we were working towards our patient-centered medical home accreditation, a lot of the language, the shared language around quality, around, how do we do this work? I think really the foundation was laid there. Train your team, Triple P, any sort of general like behavioral health training opportunities, not just for providers, but also for your management team, other staff that you have. I think that's incredibly important. As well as identifying the champions, who's really going to be the spark plug for your program. And that's something that every successful program needs, and inform that work group. Dr. Capito and Dr. Carol and Miranda, they actually meet weekly. And that's, I think that works really well. And certainly Dr. Capito can speak to that as well. Other parts of things that you can do today would be to activate your network. And by that, I mean, reach out to your local behavioral health community. Our experience has been when we reach out, people are more than welcoming to, they are so thrilled to have us engage. And this has been true for our local school system and the school nurse. Dr. Capito is engaged with them on, hey, there's going to be a lot of behavioral health needs out there. And you guys are aware of that. But here are some things that I'd like to share with you. We've also engaged with our CPS team locally, because we tend to interface a lot unfortunately, that happens to be a consequence of some of the behavioral health work and some of the situations that that we learn about. Also see what other practices are doing. In North Carolina, we're quite fortunate because one, really robust independent medical practice community, but also a lot of great support through the Pediatric Society, Medical Society. And we've been just really fortunate to benefit from that. And then lastly, build that framework. For us, it really, we love the, so NCPAL is a statewide psychiatry access line. And so it's not for patients, it's for providers. And I love that Dr. Jerry Madsen, who is just wonderful, she's actually providing some helpful and very useful links and tools. A consultation line that is really helpful about, here's the situation, and I'm not exactly sure about the medication management, what might be some options that I have, so it's been incredibly valuable for me personally, and I know for many other providers in the state. And also think about, negotiating your contracts, because that's a very critical component of making this successful for the independent practice. And then for us, the other component that's been really important is the IT infrastructure, and specifically our telehealth platform. Currently, our patient visit volume is about, it's just slightly over 20% is accounted for by telehealth. And during the, during parts of COVID where just, having people in the office, the positivity rate was so high that we really, couldn't risk that, essentially Dr. Caputo was seeing all her patients via telehealth. And so that was really a lifeline for a lot of our patients, but also for our practice as well. And so our vision, we actually have a lot of things. We like to dream big, and we know that some things have to be in digestible bites. And I think this is where we're really looking forward to North Carolina Medicaid transformation, really the value-based journey where, hopefully practices like ours will be recognized, and hopefully, the things that are meaningful, but not just a classic visit encounter, will be appreciated. And so we have a lot of different things that we'd love to get in the works. One, maybe the more urgent need would be to increase the capacity of our behavioral health team. We'd love to add an LCSW a licensed certified licensed clinical social worker. That would be great. We've talked for a long time about offering these virtual education sessions. I think that would be a really welcome opportunity for our patients. That includes, everything from like a toddler tantrum series to social media safety for our adolescents. We'd also like to implement group therapy for chronic conditions and our vulnerable populations, including the LGBTQ community. We've really recognized the need for this, and we hope to strengthen the work going forward. And as I mentioned, really partner and align with our school system and community organizations to coordinate services. And lastly, we would really love to build in-house care management capabilities. We feel confident that this is something we could do really well, and it would be highly compatible to really just bolstering our behavioral health program. This really isn't easy work, but I think the clarity for all the providers out there is really, it comes from, what can I do to help the person sitting in front of me? And I think these resources or having this at your practice has been really invaluable as we continue to work and improve on what we do. So, I have to say this, I certainly don't consider myself an expert. I think I'm a pure learner like everybody here, but this is just something that we wanted to share. And Dr. Caputo and I would love to take questions. But also I just really wanted to thank the BHI Collaborative as well as the American Medical Association. I can't tell you how thrilled we were to have the opportunity to join you today. We're always just so humbled and thankful when our work is recognized. And so thank you for this opportunity.
So Dr. Caputo, we haven't heard from you yet. But it sounds like this is a pretty substantial load on your shoulders. And I did see and was not surprised to see the need to expand the number of behavioral health providers in the practice. So talk to us a bit about your journey to this practice and your assessment of the way things are now and the way that you'll evolve over time.
Great question. And Dr. Wilson, thank you so much for that presentation. I think it was great to see kind of historically how the practice has gotten to where it was with the timeline there long before I joined. So I in graduate school had a placement in primary care, and I was actually the first behavioral health clinician at that practice. And so kind of had some opportunity to do program development in that role. And that opportunity really kind of made me kind of fall in love with this work to see how much primary care really reaches those children and adolescents that would otherwise never show up in a specialty mental health office. So really kind of access to behavioral health care is kind of my passion. And so it has been, a great journey so far. COVID has made it interesting with the volume. So what, just from the research on primary care behavioral health and my kind of training in that area, what we know is the ratio of providers to BHC behavioral health consultants that works best is typically kind of one BHC to every three or four providers. And so like Dr. Wilson said, We currently have 13 providers and then just me, and over 16,000 patients. So kind of coming in, we knew that. We knew that I was not going to be able to meet the demand in a normal world, but then you throw in COVID and the demand has been very high. And so I think that that has been the greatest challenge this year is how do we kind of navigate that, in which patients, you know, do I prioritize versus refer out when maybe that referral network is not quite there. And so, you know, that's where kind of our next steps here are to kind of expand and to meet that need. When I first started, I went around, this is before COVID, obviously, but I introduced myself to different practices in the area, got to know the therapist, got to meet some of the child psychiatrists. And that step was really valuable in kind of creating those referral networks in those kind of mutual beneficial relationships.
And it sounds as though it, from the way you're describing it, network, it takes a village, and to realize what else it is that you have that your patients can access. Because like we say, you are just one person. And I assume that occasionally you take a day or two of vacation. So Dr. Boylston, one of the questions that's come is really about finding qualified behavioral health clinicians. Obviously, you found Dr. Capito, but talk to us a bit about how you see the engagement of what we might call a broad range of people with different types of licensure into the practice.
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is quite the journey. And I think that, you know, when our project launch grant ended, our behavioral health specialist at that time, you know, that we're very close to, she actually went on to take take a position with like Childhood Developmental Services Agency. And so we were thrilled for her, but that kind of left us, you know, with that need. And it was incredibly difficult. You know, we are in a place, in general, it's difficult to recruit providers because Alamance County is not, it's not really sexy when you compare it to, you know, Raleigh and to Charlotte and to the larger cities, right? And so I think we really have to, make the case for what makes our community special. And that tends to be a really big part of how we recruit, you know, all providers, including physicians. But it's definitely been difficult. And, you know, and Dr. Capito just, the stars were aligned, you know, she has, you know, family in the area, and she really embraced, you know, working within an independent practice. And so I think we were incredibly fortunate that way. But it was a struggle getting to the point of meeting her.
And so maybe to follow up on that, another question that comes up has to do with, as you're at times having to refer patients outside of the practice that both of you are in, can you give the audience some suggestions? How do you close the loop?
Oh, yes. I think that's certainly a challenge for everyone. Some of the things that that I've found helpful and certainly for the practice, and I think this was a part of the your first question, you know, the part of the reason why we would love to build out our program is that, you know, for a lot of our patient needs, like Dr. Capito is wonderful, but, you know, we really want her to work at the top of her license. And so, you know, we would love to have more of the spectrum of behavioral health support. And I think that, you know, varying expertise and experience could be really helpful to see as part of a really well-rounded behavioral health team. So that would be one. Two, you know, one of the things that we found before Dr. Capito was that even when we did encourage patients to seek counseling, a lot of those, you know, just don't get followed up on, right? And so you see them next month and it's like, oh, wait, you haven't gone yet. Tell me, you know, like, what can we do to help this, you know? And you know, just with behavioral health, it's incredibly challenging to get information back. You know, even when we do the referral, you know, oftentimes the patient has to sign that medical authorization for us to receive information. And I feel like that makes it really challenging to stay connected in their behavioral care when it's done outside of the practice. What I love about having Dr. Caputo is that her notes are all within our EHR. And so, I can access, Dr. Caputo, taught you like some of these things, at the last visit. What do you think? How's that going? And really, I think when you're able to reference that way, it really shows the connectivity of the team. It really makes the patient and the family feel like, oh my gosh, they really do know what they're doing, which is good to build that confidence. And the other thing about, starting, even when patients start counseling with Dr. Caputo, our model is essentially, you can have about 6 visits. And then if you would benefit from continued visits, then Dr. Caputo will recommend a community therapist. But in general, we find that once you're engaged in therapy, you're much more likely to go on out and engage with a therapist in the community as well, because they've experienced that. They know what it's like in a very controlled environment like our practice. And so we do find that it's been incredibly helpful to help the patient really, sustain their work.
Dr. Caputo, I'm going to pitch the next one to you, pinging off of what Dr. Boylston just said, which is, so you may be seeing somebody for, let's say, 6 visits, and then make that community referral. It's how you do that warm handoff to the community, but also within the 3 practices that are part of the larger pediatric practice.
That's a great question. Typically, what we do is we huddle in the morning and kind of review schedules and identify potential patients for me to see that day that are on the provider's schedule, whether they're coming in for a well visit or for some behavioral concern, or even, a big part of this is also helping patients with, chronic illness or diabetes or picky eating, kind of more of those general health concerns too. So anyone that has any kind of behavioral health need, in the morning we actually identify them, and then, which may or may not come through. And so then in the moment, the provider will come, if I'm needed, will come grab me, and I'll walk back in the room with them, and we'll kind of make a treatment plan together, which is really valuable when that can happen. Again, one of our challenges is I've been so busy that we haven't really had that flexibility. I'll still get a couple of warm handoffs per day, but not, I would love to be able to do more of those. Just because, again, I think when that provider in the room transfers the rapport to me, my job is so much easier because this is a provider that this patient has known and trusted typically since birth. And as Dr. Boylston said, perhaps even their grandparent went to this practice, So thinking about transferring that rapport to me saves me so much time and energy in building that. And then, a lot of times the idea of seeing a psychologist is really, there's a huge stigma there. And so one of my main goals is to kind of destigmatize that and get them willing to see a therapist in the community, this is about wellness and everyday problems. It's not about, being crazy or any of those stigmatizing language. And then in terms of, I try to put a referral in. I'll try to give the provider or the patient some information on who I'm recommending they go to, which is increasingly challenging because with COVID, I can't keep up with who's accepting new patients, whose wait list is. And so then our referrals department will also assist and call the patient and family. And our lead care coordinator, Miranda Fox, she has a ton of experience in this area. And so she really goes over and above to kind of connect with that parent and make sure that they've gone in. And it's patient dependent. Sometimes if it's a patient that I really have concerns about connecting, I will schedule another follow-up maybe 2 months down the road just to check in to make sure that that was a smooth transition. And I don't always do that if it's a parent that I kind of feel like, okay, I know that they'll go, if that makes sense.
So I'm going to thank you. And I'm going to shift gears a bit because one of the questions has to do with how comfortable pediatricians, I would say, in your practice, Dr. Boylston, are prescribing psychotropic medications for children and adolescents. And related to that also has to do with prescription of buprenorphine. And so you talked about sort of a comfort level that people have. So tell us a bit about your practice's comfort level and how you then use that to decide about referral, let's say, to a child psychiatrist.
Great. We've been comfortable prescribing controlled substances for ADHD for quite some time, and so we have a basis for some behavioral health medication management, and primarily we'll prescribe SSRIs, and to varying degrees. I think the vast majority of our providers do prescribe, and some are a little bit more comfortable initiating. Others are more comfortable, once they have a stable regimen or have tolerated it well, they'll continue monitoring and management. And so it's not uncommon for some of us who are a little bit more comfortable and experienced, we might be asked by a different provider, hey, I saw somebody for a physical, and we talked about this, but she really needs to talk to somebody, or he really needs to talk to someone. Is this something you would feel comfortable with? So I think having support among providers and being able to talk about this in a very supportive way, I think that helps a lot. But I mean, on some level, there is a little bit of, ideally we would hope that everyone would be able to access things most, in the most expedited way possible, but that works for us too, right? And so being able to find somebody who might feel a little bit more comfortable, and we're continuing to build our skill set, so I think that's also a really important part of the work. As I mentioned, and Chelsea Swanson, thank you so much for sharing that link with us. Our providers have taken part in the psychiatric fellowship, and it was just an incredibly useful program. I think providers in general tend to be a little bit more timid. And so a lot of the program, I think for me, the value was building confidence and also recognizing the need, because I think we don't want to delay care because of our personal discomfort. And I think that, when you feel a little bit more comfortable, it's a little bit easier to recognize, wow, you really do need help at this time.
So I don't think it's visible to the whole group, but you've actually gotten a shout out from someone whose kids are taken care of in the practice for 17 and 13 years. And the quote, which would be music to anybody's ears, mm-hmm. is, "Your care is superb. Love hearing about all the fantastic work that you are doing." And so it's that kind of message from a family member, from a patient, that quite frankly makes it a very satisfying profession. So this person who sent it to the panelists, you've reminded us of that beautifully.
Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Maybe give us a bit more detail about how you use the behavioral health codes. You mentioned negotiating for them specifically with the payers. And I think the word you used was that you could almost tell right away whether a payer that you were negotiating with, whether they got it or they didn't. So talk to us about both aspects.
Oh, sure. And the codes, they're essentially the counseling codes primarily that Dr. Caputo uses, as well as survey tool codes. And we can certainly follow up and share those. With contract negotiations, it takes a lot of stamina. And it's interesting yes. because when they approach an independent practice, I think sometimes they assume that we don't have a lot of, market comps or industry knowledge. But things like knowing, you know, the practice down the street, you know, we have some idea of what they're getting. And this wasn't, you know, just in terms of just general ideas. And so recognizing that, you know, unfortunately, there isn't any transparency to these negotiations, unfortunately. But for us, you know, it actually helped that, we utilize consultants when we negotiate contracts, specifically for this reason, so that we can feel confident about kind of market comps, our area. And so we can go back and say, you know, I know that you recognize this is a small practice, but actually here are the alternatives. If we lose your panel of, you know, of patients, here are the options that they would have. And so being able to do that, I think gave us an incredible amount of leverage, because it showed that we did have some insight. And, you know, one of the things that I think has been a positive outcome with the 2021 CMS, the CPT code changes, has been that because there's more of a priority on time and complexity, I think that's highly conducive for behavioral health management, because, you know, a lot of times there's no physical exam. Really required. A lot of it is very much patient education, time together, and certainly the complexity. And so I think that's been something that's reinforced. Hey, this is something we can do meaningful, good work and get compensated in a fair manner.
So actually a question has come in that relates to that. Have you found that every visit being a behavioral health visit, and no surprise during COVID, but I think if there was one quote about COVID, that would be it. Is it altering the amount of time that the pediatricians are spending with each patient? And what is that? How do you manage your schedule?
Absolutely. And I think that it's the wild card scenario that's really difficult, because if you knew that every visit really was going to take 15 minutes more than you projected, well, that would be easy to account for in your schedule. But it's the visits that you think are going to be fairly smooth that kind of throw you off. And the next thing you know, there are four people waiting, and you just kind of get that panicked feeling. I think it's definitely something that we're getting better at. And actually, I think the warm handoff is an incredibly vital part of that. Or being able to say, hey, this is really important. Let's do this. Can you give me a little bit more information? And so for patients, I might say, you know, I recognize that. Can you fill out this survey for me? For a kid, it might be, hey, can you fill out a scared survey? I understand, the anxiety. Let's see if we can get more information on this. And how about we do a telehealth visit in a couple of weeks, and we can review this and discuss it further. And I find that patients in general are very receptive to that. And I think we need to kind of move away from the mentality that you only have one well visit a year and you talk about the six things, you know, and you resolve all six things at that visit. I think the one thing is I've gotten much more comfortable about staging the plan, right? So let's get this information. Let's meet back up. There are a couple of other resources I'd like to provide you in the meantime. You know, and for kids, it might be, hey, let me get one of our nurses who's trained in triple P. You know, we can provide some information on the tantrums right now, right? So let's read through that. We'll give you some resources, and then we'll meet back up. And so I think that for a lot of situations can be really helpful. Or, you know, for Wednesdays, I love Wednesdays because that's when Dr. Caputo is in the office with me. I'm like, can you hold on a minute? Let me go see if Dr. Caputo is available, and let's see if she can just meet and say hi. She's busy. So she's just going to come and say hi. This is not going to be the full session with you, but meet her and then let's develop a plan.
I'm going to pitch the next question to Dr. Caputo. And two parts, really, but I think we can blend them together. It has to do with how you manage that. Gee, Dr. Boylston's in the office. It's Wednesday. And she calls you or asks you to come in when you're seeing a patient. Do you limit the number of interruptions that so people know if you're getting bombarded? And then secondly, talk to us a bit about telehealth and how you are using it, not just now, but like when we're past COVID or the worst of it. Do you think you're going to be using it as much?
those are great questions. And to clarify that what Dr. Boylston said is I will do a billable visit with that patient in a warm handoff if I have time. And that's one of the ways I manage it is I try to do an introduction if I can. And one of the things I say is please do interrupt me that because I want to be available kind of for the physician. I think kind of my primary goal in primary care is to be a consultant to the provider. I view them as my client. And so I want to help them as much as I can. That being said, when I am busy, I will just stick my head and say, hi, let's get you on my schedule. And so then they'll have that kind of planned visit. But if I had a no-show or if I have flexibility in my schedule, then I will see them. I see patients every only for about 15 to 20 minutes. And so I had been trying to schedule only one patient an hour and then take warm handoffs. But again, with COVID, I've had to schedule every 30 minutes. And the other thing to mention, I was just thinking about the billing question before. I also bill health behavioral codes. So I do the psychotherapy codes if there is a psychiatric diagnosis of any kind, including just an adjustment disorder. And then if there's not, let's say constipation or sleep, then I do those health behavioral codes. Unfortunately, we haven't consistently had those covered by insurance. So that's been one of our barriers, but we're working on that. Hopefully, I think more insurance companies are coming around to those. And those can be in shorter increments of kind of 15 minutes or even some wiggle room in there. So if I do a briefer visit, those codes are really nice.
That was Dr. Yun Boylston, Dr. Alexandra Capito, and Dr. Kathleen Blake on effective BHI strategies for independent practices. I'm Todd Unger, and this is Moving Medicine, a podcast by the American Medical Association. You can also subscribe to Moving Medicine and other great AMA podcasts anywhere you listen to yours, or visit ama-assn.org/podcasts. Thanks for listening.